Vous écoutez Technologic, une émission où nous passons en revue les épisodes de Star Trek et répondons aux questions de connaissances à bord le vaisseau spatial de temps, l'USS Relativité.
All right. Hey, everyone. You are listening to Technologic, where we review Star Trek episodes and enjoy Trek trivia aboard the Federation timeship USS Relativity. This is Technologic number 145 for Stardate 2014.124. Today, we'll be reviewing the Voyager episodes Year of Hell Parts 1 and 2, or perhaps Years of Hell.
No, it's just 1 year.
Yeah, it's only 1 year.
It's only 1 year. It just seems like it goes on for years.
If I told you to count the stars in the cosmos, would the task ever be complete? Time is patient, so we must be patient with it.
Space. The great unknown. The Titanic. As I recall, it sank.
Let's just say I've made a few improvements.
It's your body. Who am I to judge? I'm only the chief medical officer. What do I know?
It is offensive. Fortunately, taste is irrelevant.
Bill, you're back from oblivion. Excellent.
Yeah. It's really, really good to be back. I mean, I managed to see some of the mission logs that you guys told me I couldn't see and were classified and all that, and some vague memories have come back. Apparently, I was stuck in a timeline where this is all just a science fiction television show for people. I was living in 21st century Mississippi, but I was pretty happy. I had a nice family and things were cool. But
did you play the flute?
No. I did not.
Wait,
I did not play the flute.
Are you sure you weren't in the Nexus?
No, it wasn't that fun. No, it wasn't that nice. No, it was okay. I was dealing with it, but gosh.
Captain? Hey, Captain.
Yes, sir.
I was going over the logs from Bill's shuttle to make sure that, the Krennan weapon didn't do any damage. And I discovered that the temporal shields were actually offline during the time change. Now, it could have just been a coincidental timing, or it could have been a really clever way for someone to make sure that they didn't exist when we had to review an animated series episode.
That's pretty hardcore. Bill, would you allow yourself to be erased from history to avoid visiting the animated universe?
Well, I'm going to have to approach that as a hypothetical question because I I'm really not sure. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. Seems a bit extreme, though, even for me.
I mean, we're talking the animated series, though. So is it that extreme?
I don't know. I mean, maybe.
Perhaps he was worried we'd go to Equestria again.
Oh.
He didn't go
I might be willing to erase myself from history for that.
And if you could go back and erase yourself from that part of history, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that might be something worth looking into.
With this,
With this Krennan weapon, if I can get some schematics, I might do that.
Well, hopefully, you won't remember what you already remember. Otherwise,
right.
It would be pointless.
Yeah,
Carrie, is this worth investigating?
It would be fun to investigate, sure, but at the same time, even if we found that he had done that, he technically didn't exist, and so punishing him for something that he did when he didn't exist wouldn't work.
Right. It's impossible. I didn't exist.
Yes. Yeah. So let me just say, Bill, excellent work. You managed to do something that you couldn't be punished for.
Can't we punish him now?
I certainly don't have any idea what you're talking about, but I will thank you all the same.
Nice loophole. I'm sure she'll make sure that loophole is closed up by the next time we have to go to the animated universe.
Yes, the next time we go to the animated universe, I will ensure that there is something on the books that says that you can be punished for purposefully or accidentally removing yourself from the timeline.
It won't be necessary. I won't do that, and I can't imagine that I did.
I'm pretty sure you did.
Maybe.
Mike, you're just jealous. All right, I guess we'll let it go this time. But you better exist next time we have to go to the animated universe.
I'll do everything in my power to simply exist.
Captain, all this talk about non-existing has got me thinking. If time is undone by the end of this, won't our review vanish too? Just sort of edit it out of time like it was one big blooper?
Only one way to find out. Let's get to the review before the Krynim can sidetrack us again. Oh, no!
We're too late!
Our piloting us right out of here. We gotta go!
If that ship is destroyed, all of history might be restored. And this is one year I'd like to forget. Time's up.
What was that?
Unknown.
For 100 Quatlus.
This is a test of some kind, isn't it?
Wager. 100 Quatlus. 400 Quatlus. 200 Quatlus against.
Welcome to Treknologic Trivia.
Yay.
All right.
My book is happy. Can you hear it?
Yes.
Yeah, the book is singing a happy song.
It is. Well, hopefully it will be happy for you. We'll have to see.
Let's hope so.
Yes. So we're excited for another round of Trek Trivia, right?
Yes, we are.
Definitely.
Maybe.
No, definitely.
The good news, nice. Bill, is while you were gone, Chris and Mike did not get the fortnightly double.
I noticed that. And it went straight to, it wasn't even like any hesitation. Like, yep, that's straight to the listeners.
That's right. Uh-huh. Just roll it on through.
So.
Yeah. Keep Mike, moving. Nothing to see here.
Bill has 216 Quatlus. Chris has 578 Quatlus.
Yeah.
And Mike has the number of
the beast.
The hologram. 666 Quatlus.
Yes.
I have to admit, Mike, when I heard that your score, your number of Quatlus at the beginning of last episode's trivia,
was the neighbor of the beast?
Well, it was 665. It was it was the neighbor. And I was like, oh, just get one. That would be so great.
Yeah.
Have you been listening to Iron Maiden all week?
Backwards.
Okay, so we're going to start with Bill since he still only has, the least. Bill, what is the diameter of a Borg sphere ship?
Nice.
Do you need that in miles or kilometers?
Or feet.
Meters?
Feet.
Cubits.
Feet? Wow, that was unexpected.
In cubits, please.
In cubits? Well, okay. I'm going to say 65,000 feet. You say diameter or radius?
Yeah.
Diameter.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 65,000 feet.
I think that's going to be way big.
That is way too big.
I know. It's more like 5,000.
Is it 1,000?
No, it's not that tiny.
1,200. C, 1,500. Or D, 2,500.
Oh, is this a little thing that like popped out?
Yeah, the little sphere.
Borg sphere ship.
Yes.
Oh, but not like a. Oh, I see. Okay.
I said the sphere ship.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I'm sure you read it correctly. This is all about being stupid and, peeling away the layers of the onion. I'm going to go with D, 2,500.
That would be incorrect.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness. Bill's an ogre.
I don't get it.
Because you're peeling away the layers?
Because you're peeling away the layers because ogres are like onions. They have layers.
Oh, I didn't know that about ogres.
They're not like parfaits.
No.
Which also have layers.
But everybody loves parfaits.
Yeah, me and Takaran Golem, we got like a little monster party.
So, no, it was actually Mike's most feared answer.
C.
1,500 feet.
Wow.
I thought that would be a bit small. I've been in apartments that are bigger than that, even in Hoboken.
Well, apparently
the Borg don't require a lot of personal space.
Yeah, but there's at least three or four Borg in there.
Yeah, but they can be right next to each other. They don't mind.
A 1,500 foot diameter for three Borg, that's a lot.
I need space, bro. I need stretching room. No, I know. I'm kidding.
You better not ever get Borged.
Yeah, but I think what threw me off is that there are other types of – there's like the giant Borg sphere as well, you know, because like –
Well, but you didn't say the giant sphere.
Yeah, yeah. I just didn't know there were multiple types of sphere. And then it's like, oh, that little escape pod that went, you know, that went to visit First Contact, which is, of course, the reference in this week's episode. So I guess I should have been more on my game. But that's what happens. Yeah. You don't get Quatloos.
No, right. Quatloos for you.
No Quatloos for me. No Quatloos for you.
Okay.
No Seinfeld reference. Well, we're just going.
Okay, there's only one Borg sphere size, according to Memory Alpha.
How'd they fit the entirety of Voyager into that sphere at the end of the series, if it's 1,500 square feet?
Oh, that was the...
The diameter's not square feet.
Unimatrix, whatever.
1,500. It's
just, yeah. You're right. Of course, Carrie. I'm sorry. Yeah,
no, that's okay.
I misspoke. But I mean, you know,
that wasn't a ship.
Correct.
Well, this all adds up to equal my confusion. So there you go.
Because the Unimatrix.
I already lost the point, so we have to rub it in my face. Let's just move on.
No, I'm not saying a word.
Please.
The Unimatrix was like a giant Borg space station.
Yeah, but. Isn't it like a never mind. I'll go watch the last episode of Voyager myself, and I'll figure out what the heck's going on, and I'll get back to you.
All right.
We can table this for now. Please. I'm begging you.
Okay. So, Chris, what title is given to the leader of the Romulan Star Empire?
Praetor.
Yeah. Wow.
Two Quatloos for you.
Yes. All right. Oh, here you go, Mike.
From her laughter, I'd say the answer is C.
Yeah, I always love that when she busts out laughing before she even says anything.
Yeah, that's always good.
I'm sorry. It's just because it's like so ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
What Cheers regular portrayed Savick?
Oh
my God.
Gravy.
Really?
Wow. Good gosh almighty.
And I will tell you, it's actress names, not...
Not the character name?
Oh, I can't believe you gave half of it away.
Well, because it says, what cheers regular, and then I don't remember the person's character name, so I would have, like, said, no, you're wrong.
Steel.
Yeah, Steel.
It's not Diane.
Steel. No, no, not the character name, the right. Actress's name. The actress's name. Really? Come on, kid.
She was in all the diet commercials.
Look who's talking.
Her name? Don't help him, Bill.
Oh, because
Sally Struthers.
Really, Chris?
Go.
Because everyone knows Adrian Barbeau.
Kirstie Alley.
Yay!
Correct.
Yes!
And the only reason that you had a problem with that is because Kirstie Alley was C.
Oh, C, it was blocking me.
Okay, here you go, Bill. What was the molecular structure of the aliens in Schisms based on?
Love it.
Wow.
Crystals.
There's a specific.
There's a crystalline... silicon crystal structure, wasn't it? Am I close? I'm close, but I'm not getting it right. Like what?
No, it's when they say molecular structure, they're talking about the molecule that's used.
You actually have to give the molecular structure.
So what? The name of the type of molecule.
You know, like H2O.
It's not silicon, obviously. So I guess I got a free one there. How about NaCl?
No. Is it A, trilithium, B, solanogen, C, tetron? No, tetron.
Just hold the book up to the camera.
Or D, gravitrons.
Oh, crap. Can I have those again, please?
Yeah, sure.
Are we allowed to say crap on this podcast?
Yes.
Sorry.
Trilithium. Solanogen, tetron, It's T-E-T-R-Y-O-N.
Tetrion.
No, T-E-T-R-Y-O-N.
That would be Tetrion.
Uh-huh.
Tet-ri-on.
Thank you. Or D, gravitrons.
Wait, gravitrons or gravitons?
Gravitons.
Okay.
No.
She's lost it. Oh, God, run.
I don't know. I think I can get it down.
Gravitons.
I think I can get it down to A and D, but that's okay. Just baby ointment for your butt.
Which one?
I'm going to go with A. Yeah, is it gravitons?
No, it's solanogen.
Solanogen? I don't remember that episode.
Solanogen sounds like an ointment you put on your face.
It does.
Yeah.
Helps with athlete's foot.
Yeah, it's got a hyperactive collagen of it called solanogen. And it just lubes up your crusty cankles.
Cankles.
It would be a great product. I mean, I could use it.
On that image.
Chris. Apparently the book likes you. Who was the Dabo girl that fell in love with Quark's brother?
Oh, come on!
I actually have to know her name. You asked about molecular structure and you know, and architecture of Borg, you know, ships. And this guy, these guys,
I don't remember her name.
Yeah, that's the problem.
You don't remember her name?
Chase Masterson.
Oh, come on, kid. We just did this on Risa, man.
Yeah, well, there's a reason why my memory's blown a gasket on that.
Never remember anything you don't have to, right? You have to delete something.
Despite her being the most logical character in
that episode.
Yeah.
Chase Masterson, I don't remember her name.
Well, Chase Masterson is not the Dabo girl.
Right. No.
The character is a Dabo girl.
She just plays her on TV.
Is it A, Allura, B, Leosa, C, Lita, or D, Sarda?
It's C.
Yes.
Yeah, in your face.
Correct.
Wow.
It's for correct.
Yep.
Yeah, now it's Mike's turn.
I was getting it confused with Babylon 5.
Yeah, well, because... No.
A much cooler character.
Okay, Mike.
Yes.
What was the name of the Cardassian military freighter Dukat and Darmar served on?
I have no idea.
Okay. A, Grumali. B, Koranak. C, Rabol. Or D, Cornair.
I'm going to go with B. Ah. Oh.
You know what the answer was?
Nope. Clearly.
It was the Grumali.
Oh.
Okay.
All right. Fortnightly double.
Fortnightly double. Are we ready?
All right.
I'm ready.
I may be ready. I don't know.
Yeah, you've had some bad ones.
If you know the answer, write your wager and your answer on a sheet of paper and...
It's because that temporal drift following you around after.
I know. I feel like Pigpen from, you know, Charlie Brown and like this temporal cloud around me. It's
temporal drift. Wasn't that a race movie?
A race movie? Yeah. It was Speed of Light and Really Angry 9, Temporal Drift. You know, that series where all these guys in these hot-rodded, customized spaceships try to prove that you can go the speed of light and they get really close.
Right.
Okay. How much information did the spatial distortion ring being leave in USS Voyager's computers?
Oh, that's another one where they're asking us gigaquads.
Yeah.
I'd like to invite you all to write in and answer this question because I'm not.
Yeah.
No, thank you. No idea.
No takers?
Gigaquads.
Come on, Mike.
No takers.
You should know this.
Is it tetraquads?
You're a computer.
I'm sure it's going to be something gigaquads.
So we're going to pass it on to our listeners. You can get two quatloos. Yay.
Yay, quatloos for you.
So if you know how much information the spatial distortion ring being left in Voyager's computer, USS Voyager's computers, not the Mirror Universe one, USS yes. Voyager's computers, you can send me a private message on our forums, a direct message on Twitter, or send email to carrie@treknologic.com. And you all can right. thank you, Quatlus. Rock on. Okay.
Okay, shout out to Christian1313 for technologicanalyzer.justplainapps.com.
It's so cool.
What can you do with it, Mike?
You can do everything but change time.
All right. Well, what so thank you for listening. Oh, and you know what? We love feedback. In fact, we read, listen to, and discuss our feedback on the Listening Post podcast, which was released last week. You can give us feedback by giving us an iTunes review, by emailing us at feedback@treknologic.com. You can even email us voicemails. You can tweet us at Treknologic. You can find us on Facebook and Google+. And we have a Treknologic forum at treknologic.com. So join our discussions and let us know what you think. Hey, Carrie, what are we reviewing next time?
Next time, we are going to be reviewing, well, I don't know that we can say that we're going to enjoy it, but because Bill apparently has been suffering from temporal psychosis, he's going to be piloting us to the Enterprise episode, These Are the Voyages.
My therapist thinks it'll be good for me that if I can actually navigate us through this temporal mess and get back in one piece, that my mind will snap back together.
I have done everything I could possibly do to try and engineer us around this episode, and I've been blocked at every turn.
Because it's a fixture in the timeline, we have to do it.
Look, I'm excited that we're going to go watch a series finale. I don't think we've done that before.
Oh, really?
You know, I'm just saying, don't be surprised if I don't exist next time.
That's not allowed.
We're not allowed to do that because yeah. we'll just get one of the other mics.
I was about to say, don't be surprised if we don't get looking for a backup file either.
That's right. Yeah.
Smarty pants. You'll be there. You'll be there.
I'm just glad we get to do a series finale for once.
Well, that's cool. I mean, it's we should do one every so often.
Well, every 4 years. That's
yeah,
okay.
Right.
Wait, then that means we should be waiting another year before we do this one.
No.
Until then, on behalf of everyone here at Treknologic, love long and prosper.
If that ship is destroyed, all of bloopers might be restored. And this is 1 year I'd like to forget. This is the one where we waste 2 hours for something that never happened.
This episode was written by Brandon Braga and Joe Manosky, and they were directed by Alan Croker and Mike Vihar. Originally, they aired on November 5th and 12th of 1997, and Geos ranks these episodes 4th and 17th of 171 episodes.
Are you sure that's not Mike Viger?
That's yeah. definitely not Viger.
It's probably Vihar. Well, now, there's a few things to talk about. This episode was directly connected to an episode called Before and After, where Kes was apparently doing some time jumps due to some Krenim involvement. I don't remember that episode, but they didn't want this to be super connected to that episode. Like, they wanted it to be able to stand on its own, and ultimately they were able to do that. This was originally going to be in a third season, be a third season episode, but you know, when they decided to wait on it till the fourth season, they had to replace some of Kes's lines. They just gave those lines to 7 of 9.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because Counselor Troy wasn't available.
He wasn't on the show.
And Whoopi Goldberg was not available.
That's right.
Which is too bad, because she's always great.
Yes.
You know, originally Brandon Braga did not want the Year of Hell story arc to end in a second part. He actually wanted it to be a four-parter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's like, I remember pushing him, like, I want it to be four parts.
Four episodes where nothing happens when it's all done.
So Brandon Braga wanted this thing to be like a four-parter, and there was talk about how they wanted the ship to still be destroyed and broken up and beaten up throughout the rest of the season, like while they slowly effect repairs. That didn't play out. In the end, they decided, of course, the reset, which is
right.
It's a show about nothing. Okay, so they were like kind of uncertain how to end the story, and finally Braga came up with the idea that, you know, basically Anorax is Captain Nemo, and you know, it's 20,000 leagues under the sea. Anorax is Nemo, and then they were able to sit down, they watched the movie, and you know, the character of Nemo is very interesting because he's both a bad guy, but he's also the hero. He's evil, but he's also tortured, and all of that sort of influenced their approach to Anorax.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically Anorax lost his wife due to his own arrogance with his thinking he could really control the change in the timeline. So, you know, so now he's kind of got like some backstory, and Kurtwood Smith said about it when they kind of introduced that really gave him something to sink his teeth into.
Yeah.
And now in this episode, Tim Russ playing Tuvok got to do some new things. He is blinded by an explosion, which originally they wanted it to like take off one of his legs too, but it was just too much. They were going to do a Forrest Gump style green screen thing on his leg, and
wow,
that just proved really difficult to shoot. I'm sure they were under a quick budget here, a quick timetable, to get this thing shot. I mean, Kurtwood Smith said that they shot all of his scenes for the first episode in one day.
And like, wow.
Yeah, I know. Can you imagine? It seems like a lot. I mean, he has more stuff in the second. I'm sure the second episode took more than one day to shoot his
scene.
He's in there quite a bit more. But, you know, the final scenes of that episode are like the most, you know, dramatic and strong. And you know, he's like trying to just keep his energy up at the end of the day because that's when they shot him, you know.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, so Tim Russ, you know, has to play blind. And he kept like instinctually looking at the people he was talking to.
Right.
An actor, and that's what you do. You make eye contact and deliver your lines. And he's like, I wish they'd put something over my eyes. It would have been easier to play.
Right.
But one thing that's interesting about that injury is that it explores the relationship between Tuvok and Seven of Nine, which in later seasons kind of is developed a little further. And, you know, you sort of see how that bond could have occurred. You know, that's what Tim Russ was saying about it.
The Krynim use a temporal weapon to completely erase a colony from history in the hopes of restoring something. But we aren't told what it is they're trying to fix yet. Apparently, they're big jerks because they decide they need to commit genocide against the Zal species to fix whatever they're trying to fix. Meanwhile, this is happening back on Voyager.
Before there were maps and globes, let alone radar and subspace sensors, mariners navigated by the stars. We're returning to that tried and true method, but this time there's a difference.
Ensign Kim and Seven of Nine have merged Starfleet and Borg ingenuity to create this new technology. And I'm sure I speak for the entire crew when I say thank you. Now, how the hell does it work?
Astrometric sensors measure the radiative flux of up to 3 billion stars simultaneously. The computer then calculates our position relative to the center of the galaxy.
This mapping technology is 10 times more accurate than what we've been using. Seven, will you do the honors? We've plotted a new course home.
By my estimates, this trajectory will eliminate 5 years from your journey.
Our journey? Nice work, Seven.
That region of space we're about to enter, it looks like it has a lot of M-class planets.
It does. Spatial grid 005, primary species, the Zal.
What do we know about this species?
Technologically advanced, but non-confrontational. Their resistance quotient is quite low.
Thank you all for coming. We've got a lot of work to do, so...
I'd like to say a few words, if I may. I've prepared a speech for this occasion. When I was first activated on Stardate 48315, and I found myself mano a mano with the Delta Quadrant, I didn't think we'd survive a week, let alone 3 years. There was strife. There was discord. You were all at each other's throats. But over time, I've had the pleasure and pride of watching this crew learn to work together as colleagues, even friends.
Hear, hear.
Who would have thought that this eclectic group of Voyagers could actually become a family? Starfleet, Maquis, Klingon, Talaxian, Hologram, Borg, even Mr. Paris. Granted, we've had our share of difficulties. One might say we've seen the best of times and the worst of times. I'd now like to recount some of those times from my unique perspective. Under the category of best of times, I invite you all to recall the moment
Bridge
when
to
I...
the captain.
Janeway here.
We're being hailed. A vessel off the port bow.
On our way.
Well, perhaps we could all reconvene later.
All right. Well, first off, I want to just start with a quick thing about the Krenim vehicle. So it starts with them shooting this weapon at the little colony. And then you see the whole display of the timelines all fluctuating and telling them that it didn't work, whatever they're trying to get a hold of. And just as soon as I saw them shoot some weapon at something and erase somebody from time, they had me.
Yeah. Love that weapon.
Oh, it
you
was
and Captain so, Chris both.
Yes, yeah, indeed.
So cool.
The giant eraser.
Yes. Then they went into the introduction to Astrometrics, which is, you know, plays a lot of big parts in later episodes, and this is where they bring it in. And it really is a cool thing. They got the whole three-dimensional display and the curved walls and stuff for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's something you'd expect to see in a movie.
Well, yes! it reminds me of the scene in which Data has just activated his emotion chip or something, and he's having a hard time with it, and they're in the Astrometrics lab, and he and Picard are talking, and I remember the Astrometrics lab was incredible in that scene, like really super intense.
Yes.
I wonder if this episode came out after that movie, or if the other way around.
Was that after?
I don't know.
Was that after the one with the Borg that invade that came?
No, that was Generations.
I'm pretty sure it's Generations.
Yeah, it was.
So this is probably after that.
They were tracking the rift.
Oh, yeah, right. Exactly. So this is probably after that.
This was in 1997.
Yeah, Generations is definitely before that, right?
1994. So, yes, this was way after Generations.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. And I love the Doctor.
Yes, the Doctor is hilarious. I've written an epic speech for this.
I know. It's like... It's like, well, you know what? It's a two-parter, so let's let the Doctor really go off for a while. And really get maybe people, like, because as a viewer, you're just like, oh my goodness, he's still talking.
Well, it's funny. I wonder if Janeway has somebody, like, where she has a little hidden button, panic button. She presses it, and they're like, oh, hey, guess what? We're being hailed.
Because you're needed on the bridge.
I'm sorry, but don't you think they would have a mute button for holograms?
Well, he is his own life form by this point.
Oh, so that's kind of
really
like rude.
Turn him off. Yeah, that'd be kind of rude.
We wish we had one.
Mike does not want a mute button.
But about the Doctor, I love that he was saying Talaxian, Borg, even Mr. Paris.
Yeah, I know. I give him a good joke. Yeah, he gets a good joke in there. Very, very like roast dinner kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, I like how it's all, we used to steer by the stars, and we're going to return to that proud tradition.
That's right.
And isn't that like how you've been navigating all along?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't really good writing on there for Chakotay to say there. I mean, they could have given him better lines like, and in that tradition, with thousands of years of advancements, we've been able to, I don't know, something.
Yeah, we've improved on that. We've improved on that or something like
that. Yeah, you think? Because like, the Seven's like... Billions of stars are scanned at once. I'm like, what? What do you mean billions of stars are scanned at once? That's crazy. How much processing power does this thing have?
How many gigaquads of data does that take?
Yeah, right.
But they have gel packs.
Yeah. Oh, God.
The organic circuitry that was supposed to be like really played into the thing never really got mentioned much after the first season.
After the ship got the cold.
Yeah, after they broke it.
Yeah. And then one thing that I liked about Seven is that she has, for each alien they encounter, a resistance quotient.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Quotient. Yeah. Yeah.
I totally love that.
That is good.
I have one already for my own use.
Oh, yeah? Your own resistance quotients?
But it's against people within the crew.
Oh, naturally. He gauges it by how long they can stay in the agony booth.
Right. Yeah. That's, yeah. Ouch.
All right.
The Krynim continue to show that they're jerks by firing on the Voyager for being in Krynim space, even though he admits it's disputed. He threatens to destroy Voyager, and Janeway, she gets a little snarky.
Excellent.
With all due respect, unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around. But I'm certainly willing to discuss this issue with you.
No discussion, no compromise.
Apparently, the Krynim miss the good old days when they were in charge. We get the details from the Zal official, who is interrupted by the big bad Krynim. He's upset that the Voyager is talking to the Zals, and there's a verbal barrage followed by a barrage of weapon fire.
We've done nothing to provoke these attacks.
Your presence in our space is provocation enough.
We've been trying to communicate with your vessels, but the only answer I get is weapons fire.
State your identity.
Captain Janeway of the Federation Starship...
And your reason for violating our borders.
We're simply trying to get home. If you'd kindly allow us to pass through...
No. You will submit to the Krynim Imperium. We'd prefer to seize your vessel before it is too badly damaged. Surrender now, and I will forego the execution of your crew.
I don't respond well to threats.
Then prepare to be boarded.
All hands, battle stations. This is turning into the week of hell.
After another round of fire, the ship hails them and berates them.
Their weapons are chronoton-based. They're penetrating our shields because they're in a state of temporal flux.
Then let's exercise the better part of valor. Get us out of here. Warp 6.
Warp 6.
Now we get to hear from the Krynim about why they are doing this.
Sir, you are correct. The Zal homeworld was the focal point. It has produced a complete temporal restoration.
Complete?
Yes, sir.
Our attempts may be sufficient. They may be even relatively successful, but they will never be complete. Choose your words with more precision.
My apologies.
What were the exact results?
The Krynim Imperium has been restored to power. Our territory now includes 849 inhabited worlds spanning 5,000 parsecs.
Counterindications?
Negligible. No superior enemy forces, no unexpected diseases. Calculations indicate a 98% restoration. Our race is thriving once again.
The colony at Kiana Prime, that was restored as well?
No, sir. In this timeline, the Imperium does not extend that far.
Then our mission has failed. Begin calculations for the next incursion.
Sir, we have just accomplished the impossible. A 98% restoration. Another incursion, even a minor one, could undermine everything. We should dismantle this weapon and rejoin our people.
No, not until every colony, every individual, every blade of grass is restored.
You said yourself our task will never be complete. Please, we should be satisfied with what we have accomplished. For 200 years, we have never come this close.
Not close enough.
If I may speak my thoughts, many among the crew are convinced that you have lost your objectivity. They think your quest for precision is unrealistic. Sir, we will never restore 100% of what we had. We can manipulate the time continuum for another 10 centuries. It will never happen.
Return to your station and begin a new set of calculations. Is that clear?
Perfectly.
You surprise me, Obrus. After so many years, you still perceive time through conventional eyes. Never is a word that has no meaning here. As long as we stay on this vessel, protected from space-time, we have all eternity to accomplish our mission.
I'm surprised that they followed him for like 200 years.
Yeah.
Because I mean, he's like psycho about this one colony.
They don't know that.
No, because I'm sure he asks them about that colony every single time.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I'm sure his first officer definitely knew.
Right.
He's like, oh, yeah, no, sorry, not that one.
Yeah, but everything but that, pretty much.
I know, right? It's like, it doesn't extend that far. So what, this colony was on the last 2% of the reaches of 5 parsecs?
Yeah.
Right.
Or 5 parsecs plus 2%, I guess.
Yes. Well,
I
mean,
it's always the last. Area. It's always the last place you look.
That's why you always look for a word in the dictionary starting at the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
Well, I think this guy doesn't understand time travel, because if you're affecting whole civilizations, you're never going to get it down to the precision of having the exact person that you want there. I mean, you could time travel backwards and go to when your parents were conceiving you and like jump out of the closet and go, boo.
Yes.
And if it's the wrong sperm, then it's not you.
Right.
I mean, so it's very, very tricky. Time travel requires more intelligence than what this guy has.
I was going to say, and I mean, we can talk about the correct solution he could have done now. And then that way we won't have to talk about it through the whole thing. But really what he should have done was calculate a correction to just restore that colony first. And he could brought them all on the ship and then gone on and corrected his other stuff to bring the venom back.
Talk about how it should have ended. Shout out to those guys and their blog, and those videos are awesome. But you're so right. It didn't occur to me, but you know, I don't have the power of Moogle. but yeah, you're absolutely right. That would have boom, problem solved. Because at this point, it's like, not, I mean, you know, you feel the first officer's pain, and you know, it's early in the fairly early in the episode. It's only like it's the week of hell still. It's not even the month of hell yet.
Yes,
you
know? Or the year of hell.
Yeah, and eventually the year of hell. And, you know, so it's like, yeah, I mean, this guy's clearly crazy, right? He's obsessed about his whomever it was. We'll let the you know, episode play out. But whoever it was that was on that colony,
yes,
which you have to assume was someone close to him, someone he cared about.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, so you have no objectivity. And when this guy is talking about, like, it's 98%, 5 parsecs. You know, it's like this amazing thing that they've accomplished after, and it's taken them 200 years to get the calculations right. That freaked me out a little bit. 200 years.
Yes.
And it's like, and you know, and to answer the point or to respond to the point Carrie made, it's like, I think they all signed on knowing that this could be a
really
very long mission.
Yes.
But I got to tell you, if I was on, I mean, I would not me, because Chris, I don't want you to get nervous, Captain. I will say this. I can totally understand the crew going complete mutiny on this guy. Because, I mean, all of a sudden, yeah, here's Captain Ahab. He's going to drag them all down, you know.
Right. And
for that last blade of grass.
Yeah. For that last blade of grass, in his own, to use his own words. Exactly, Carrie. That's so true. So it's just crazy. And, you know, so – and, you know, the thing is, like, when you see Voyager interacting with the Empire he's trying to restore, sympathy is out the window.
Yeah. And let's right. – I mean,
don't compromise!
Yeah, let's be clear that there are two different Krenim ships. There's the warship that is dealing with Janeway and the Zal and everything else. And this tiny little time ship is off elsewhere. So it's not the same ship.
Right.
Right.
Well, and in the earlier clips where Voyager is actually meeting the Krenim, did you guys notice how when they first meet him and then they're in the tiny little Krenim ship, the guy had kind of like a Weasley voice?
Yes.
And then after the time change happens and he's the captain of this giant Krenim warship,
yeah,
he's like calm and speaks much more slowly and with intention.
And I'm going to hurt you.
These are good acting choices.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, and then the last one, it's like, no, don't compromise.
We want your ship intact so we can use it.
Right.
Well, we prefer to keep your ship.
No, I'll kill you. I'll kill you dead.
It's like, whoa, wow. Anyway, so my point is it really worth restoring this great and glorious empire? They seem like a bunch of jerks.
Remember, when you are the bad guys, you consider yourself the good guys.
Yes, I'm sure they are.
Right, Captain Chris?
Yeah, that's how it works, right, Chris?
Excuse me?
What? Don't you consider yourself the good guys?
Of course. See? I follow Starfleet. Starfleet's the good guys.
Yes, yes, indeed, they are.
You know, it's funny, as he was saying that, his goatee grew a little longer.
But I like how Janeway is like, unless you got something bigger in those torpedo tubes.
Yeah, right. That's a great line. That's probably.
I am not impressed by your stinky little ship.
Tiny little torpedo tubes. I am not impressed.
The one thing that Krynim do not have, despite their temporal weapons, they do not have time travel.
That's right.
They don't.
No.
So that's very interesting and something that I don't think I've ever seen before.
Yeah, that they have weapons that can affect time, but they can't travel in time themselves.
Right.
Yeah, that is a unique aspect of this story, which is really kind of interesting in itself.
Well, I mean, but the one ship is protected from time by the fact that they've been on the ship for like 200 years.
Yes. Right. They have shielding that basically takes them out of time.
Right. So it's been 200 years, but they're not dead or aged or anything. Right.
Yes, correctamundo.
Voyager's badly hurt in the fight 32 days in. The doctor has to evacuate patients because they're about to lose the deck that has the medbay on it. They decide to leave some torpedo mines and move out to fight again another day.
Assemble a security team. Survey the ship deck by deck. I want a full damage report. I'll be in my ready room. You have the bridge. What's left of it?
Chakotay visits Janeway, who is cleaning her ready room. He has a cunning plan.
We should consider leaving the ship behind, breaking the crew into smaller groups. Escape pods, shuttles, each one with its own course. If all goes well, we'll rendezvous on the other side of Krenim space.
Then what?
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But at least we'd be increasing our chances of survival.
Abandon ship? The answer's no. I'm not breaking up the family, Chakotay. We're stronger as a team. One crew. One ship. The moment we split apart, we lose the ability to pool our talents. We become vulnerable. We'll get picked off one by one. Now I say we make our stand together.
To be honest, I wasn't too fond of the idea myself.
Thanks, Chakotay.
Great plan, Chakotay. That you don't even like.
But, you know, he's the first officer. He has to present options, and it is an option. But I got to say, this is one of the few times where I'm like, 100% with Janeway. Like, yes.
Yes.
I agree. Keep the crew together. All the good ideas are in one place, you know.
It's like a survival horror film. The second you all break up.
Yep, that's it.
To move off, that's it. Everybody gets picked up.
Wouldn't that have been great? Chakotay, how many horror movies from the 20th century have you seen? You know how this goes down. He's like, yes, you're right, Captain. I do love those movies very much.
All right, it's not Christopher Walken.
Yeah,
like a cross between Christopher Walken and William Shatner.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. And I started doing the voice before I even thought about what Chakotay sounds like. And the only thing that really stood out to me is he said he breathes a lot. You know, he's like, he breathes loudly. You know,
on day 47, Harry Kim and Torres are trapped in a Jefferies tube. And are playing trivia to pass the time. No Quatlus were harmed or earned in the making of this scene. 7 of 9 gets a little tie-in to one of the Star Trek movies here.
Go ahead and ask your stupid question. Before I pass out, you don't have anybody to play with.
Okay. It's a famous ship. Pre-warp civilization. Montana. Second stage. Had chemical engine.
Another clue.
Vulcans, Earth, first contact.
Is that from Cochrane's ship? What was it called? God, it's on the tip of my tongue. Oh.
Okay, here, you better lie down now. Enough trivia for now.
No, I'm going to get this one.
The Phoenix.
What?
The correct response to your query. The vessel Ensign Kim was describing it was designated the Phoenix.
Not bad. I didn't realize you knew so much about Earth history.
I don't. But the Borg were present during those events.
Really?
It's a complicated story. Perhaps another time.
Nice.
Pierce comes up with a plan based on the Titanic. Yeah. He knows how it turned out, but thinks he's better. Paris is serving double duty by helping in triage and talks with the doctor.
Emotional detachment is essential. Otherwise, you risk impairing your judgment. I understand. You could be seeing more of your friends in here soon. If you can't handle it, I'll find another assistant. You can leave.
Physician, heal thyself.
What's that supposed to mean?
Seems to me that you're the one who's getting emotional around here.
Just before the conduits on Deck 5 breached, I saw Ensign Strickler and Crewman Emmanuel at the end of a corridor. They were trying to reach the Jeffries tube. I kept the hatch open, waited for them as long as I could, but time ran out. I had no choice but to seal the hatch.
It must have been very hard for you.
My point is, it could have been worse. Had I lost my objectivity, I might have kept the hatch open and everyone would have perished.
And they get lucky with an unexploded Chronoton torpedo that wound up in a Jeffries tube that could just help them.
If we attempt to dislodge the torpedo or move it with the transporters, it will most likely detonate.
Can we disarm it?
No. The warhead is already destabilizing. I estimate it will explode in less than 2 minutes. If we reroute emergency power to this junction and erect a level 10 force field, it should be enough to contain the explosion. We must hurry.
If I can determine the exact temporal variance of this torpedo, it will help us perfect the temporal shielding.
There is no time.
We may never have this opportunity again.
I am giving you an order. Now!
The temporal variance is 1.47 microseconds.
Excellent work. But if you disobey my orders again, I will be forced to...
Okay, before you continue, Kes already knew that.
Right, that showed up in the trivia.
Yeah.
But
so let's not look at our records or anything.
Especially the cybernetic human.
Yeah.
Okay,
sorry.
But they had to come up with an excuse to blind Tuvok.
Yes.
That sound that you hear at the end is the torpedo igniting.
Right.
They're fleeing.
I don't think I have the clip of him at where he's shaving and he damages himself because he's shaving while blind.
Right.
With a straight razor.
Yeah.
I think it was just a piece of the ship.
That could be.
Some shrapnel.
I would not be surprised.
Right. Day 67 is Janeway's birthday, and the ship is still being attacked. The new goal is survival, but there's more. Chakotay gives Janeway a present. It's a timepiece. But she's not very appreciative. Instead, she talks about how it could be food or bandages or something else. Which leads us to ask, couldn't he have just recycled his own poop to make it?
I notice whenever we talk about the replicators, you guys just love to go to poop.
Yeah, and for the record, when you say we, it's not me. I have no interest in figuring out if this is recycled poop or not.
Of all of the things, every single kind of matter that can be recycled in the replicators, the only one you guys care about is poop.
Yes.
Wait.
We have to rename the show Scatologic.
I put that in there because then he could say it was a really crappy birthday.
Oh, it's so brutal. I feel like I just got punched in the gut.
Carrie, I guess I've rubbed off on you.
Probably more than once.
So they can recycle everything. So why are they taking those big old chunks of the ship and like recycling them to make new stuff for the ship?
Well, some of them might be structural, you know, like holding stuff up. But yeah, for pieces that fall off, they could do that.
Yeah.
They could pick up an asteroid, have a ton of matter.
Yep.
Their whole idea, you know, when you could convert energy to matter and vice versa, energy is really a non-issue.
Yes.
And so is stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why the whole rations thing in the beginning was stupid.
All right.
Yeah. Because energy is matter and matter is energy. It's all the same thing.
Very good, Bill. Tuvok and Seven talk about cleaning habits of humans. They're interrupted by an attack of a Krynim ship. The Voyager's new shields hold. And meanwhile, the Krynim are eradicating another planet and system. The temporal shockwave doesn't hurt Voyager due to the new shields, and afterwards, the warship is a way smaller ship.
The Krenim Imperium, over 200 star systems, 900 planets, thousands of warp-capable vessels, and now, after the shockwave, everything seems to have changed. Run a new scan.
Spatial grid 005.
Same space, different configuration. Exactly as Chakotay said, the Imperium appears to have been reduced to a few planets and a smattering of vessels. It appears that someone or something has altered history.
She just gets points for using smattering.
Yes, she used it correctly as well. See, I mean, when you muck about the timeline, horrible things can happen.
Whereas before, there was a plethora.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that from Three Amigos.
Hard, you know, but.
So if it's not an Imperium anymore, what will we call it?
A minimum?
A planets.
Minimum.
Minimum. <that's>...
Minimum.
We are the Krenim Minimum.
We are the Krenimum.
Uh-oh. It looks like the Krenim may have done something bad to themselves. The smaller ship has taken an interest in the Voyager because their possession of Chronoton tech is what threw things off and decides to take part of Voyager as well as Paris and Chakotay. Here, we get to hear the conversation between Janeway and Anorax.
That entire vessel is in a state of temporal flux. It's like they exist outside space-time. They're scanning us.
Get a lock on them.
I'm trying, but I can't isolate their signals.
We're being hailed.
On screen.
State your identity.
I'm Captain Janeway of the Federation Starship Voyager. Who are you and where are my men?
I am Anorax of the Krenim Imperium. We've transferred your crewmen to my vessel for further analysis. Your ship does not come from this quadrant.
We come from Earth, a planet 65,000 light years from here. We're on our way home.
I see.
We've been observing some rather unusual events in the region. It seems your Imperium never existed. Perhaps you could shed some light on this.
That doesn't concern you. What is important is that you understand that I bear you no hostility. But you have diverted me from my mission.
Mission? You are responsible for the changes in the timeline.
You're a long way from your world. In a manner of speaking, so am I. Unfortunately, only one of us can go home again. Your sacrifice will restore the lives of countless millions. I'm sorry.
I'm reading a massive energy buildup. Some kind of weapon.
Shields.
Temporal shields are weakening.
Captain, that energy beam. It's pushing Voyager out of the space-time continuum.
He's trying to erase us from history.
I have scanned their propulsion system. Their vessel's mass prevents them from exceeding warp 6. We can escape.
Captain, I must remind you, our structural integrity is still impaired. If we go to warp now, the damage to Voyager will be extreme.
What about Tom and Chakotay?
We'll have to come back for them. All hands clear the outer sections and prepare for wide-scale breaches. Tuvok, activate the transverse bulkheads.
Temporal shields are failing.
Engage warp 7.
They're not in pursuit.
We are losing the outer hull. Transverse bulkheads are holding.
Well, good news, Tom Paris. That Titanic idea of yours worked out a lot better than it did the first time.
He didn't improve it.
Yeah, so there's the first good bit of news in a long time. That and we can outrun them.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, you never really hear a line quite like that, you know. Captain, the energy beam is pushing the ship out of the space-time continuum.
I know.
Into what?
Yeah, I know.
Non-existence.
Yep.
Or would you just pop to another timeline?
Well, something to consider. I mean, they don't care as long as you're out of this timeline.
And what's really interesting is I bet that one colony is outside that space-time continuum.
Pushed into another universe. They're probably pushed into the mirror universe. Sucks to me.
Well, I was going to say, it'd be cool if the Voyager got pushed into the mirror universe. Come on.
Right.
Janeway, with a beard.
Evil Janeway and good Janeway would just have a real, that'd be great. You know, that'd be a great episode. Just real, real go at it, you know? Oh, goodness. Then they would end up.
We're altering the timeline right now.
Okay, but here's an idea for you. But here's an idea for you. What if, like, okay, so the ship is like erasing something from history.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. In a sense, the ship is actually traveling to a different reality.
Yes.
Yes, but you know they're in the same time frame.
Yes, like, yeah, they're not moving temporally.
Right.
If it's as if, you know, like a human being here shifted to a parallel universe in the same time.
Right.
Right. So in a way, they are traveling. They're not traveling in time, but they're traveling in parallel dimensions.
It's a possibility.
Because they transform the dimension. I don't know. Maybe
the only thing to show that they're actually changing this timeline instead of traveling to another one is that Voyager is still there after they do it.
Right. Well, and that's because Voyager has the chronoton shielding.
Right. But if they were actually traveling to another timeline,
another dimension,
right,
Voyager would not go with them.
True. Unless it was only subtly different, or
so they're actually changing this timeline.
Well, the first couple of incursions, the Voyager. I love how it's the Voyager in this review, by the way. The Voyager doesn't have the chronoton shielding, but it sees the changes around it. You know.
Well, but they don't know that there have been changes.
Yeah, not until they get the chronoton shielding.
This clip.
Right, but there's like the first encounter, they go from a guy with tiny torpedo tubes to like chronoton weapons. Like,
but they don't notice the difference until they do the thing where they have the shielding and then it changes and it's gone from the plethora to a smattering.
Right,
right.
That's the first time they notice a difference.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. That clarifies it. Okay. Well, there you have it then. Okay. All right. So that was just a waste of 10 minutes of dimension science talk.
Yeah. I'd like to say when the Voyager was being affected, I think it'd be really cool if it turned out that one of the timelines that was altered in the for Voyager was that they became Borg.
Oh, that would have been cool.
All of a sudden, there's a cube there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, crap, alter it again, alter it again.
Change it again. That would have been cool, but they probably didn't have the budget to redo Borg costumes for everyone in the middle of all of these special effects.
Yeah.
Captain Riker. That would be a neat one.
Tuvok is the captain.
Yeah, I mean, they could have done all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, but they are kind of limited on time.
Thomas Riker, but
especially since it wasn't a 4-part episode.
Yeah, if they made it 4-part, it could have had Borg.
They could have done all of that stuff.
Oh my goodness. They could have done everything.
Yes. Ooh, and then it would have felt more like a year of hell.
Yes.
We could have had Captain Wesley.
Okay, Chris, now you've just gone to like the animated universe type stuff.
Oh, but see, that would be a good animated universe episode if a kid became captain.
Say so.
that was like it really takes a lot to shut this crowd up. Holy moly. It is a pretty evil thought, though.
Day 73, and Janeway gives a lovely, flowery halftime speech about how Voyager can't sustain them anymore. She sends them off in escape pods with the directive to head towards the Alpha Quadrant, secure allies along the way, and try to get home as fast as possible. We're going to stop counting days at this point. Suffice it to say, it's later in the year, because Chakotay and Paris have been with Anorax for quite a while. Anorax plays the devil and tries to tempt Paris and Chakotay. He's not that bad, really.
When I first encountered your vessel, it was badly damaged, barely functioning. What if I told you that in the blink of an eye, I could restore Voyager to its former condition, that you and I would never have met?
that you might even find yourself closer to the Alpha Quadrant.
By using the weapon on this ship to alter history.
Yes. I can control the destiny of a single molecule or an entire civilization. Every dish you see here comes from a civilization that has been erased from time. Mr. Paris, you're devouring the last remnants of the Alceran Empire. I've collected artifacts from hundreds of worlds. This vessel is more than a weapon. It's a museum of lost histories. You two gentlemen almost became artifacts yourselves, but I've decided to spare your vessel.
Yeah, that's not bad.
No, not at all.
I mean, here, you're eating things that don't exist anymore. Look at you.
Go ahead and wipe out the very last remnants of that civilization.
Yeah. I mean, is that supposed to make them feel better?
But what was he eating? Like, it was like fruit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that could be a tree.
Yep.
A clone of some kind.
Get a little pot with some dirt in it.
Yeah.
Come on. Come on, Anorax.
Doesn't he just exude, like, I don't know. It's weird.
Coolness, I think, is what you're looking for.
No, coolness is not it. Like, he sees nothing wrong with wiping out civilizations so that he can fix his own.
Right.
Right.
But at the same time, it's okay because he's a connoisseur of those, you know, faded civilizations that he's erased. And let's be clear, if you change one molecule, you might wind up changing an entire civilization.
Yep, definitely.
Well, maybe that's what, I mean, you know, I mean, who knows? Maybe that's what his weapon does. It finds the one molecule in space-time and, like, I don't know. But, yeah, it's called being a psychopath, I think.
Yeah.
And he's such a good actor.
Yes.
I mean, I so dig this guy's work. I think he's so great. And he's just, like, relaxes into it and just, you know, you just believe it. Like, you just buy that this guy really believes what he's saying, you know. It's scary. Scary stuff. He's really good.
Yes, he is.
People on the Voyager, the Voyager.
Well, we have to say the Voyager because, you know, they could have been slipping through time or having alternate dimensions happen, right?
Right. It's a specific Voyager.
That is the Voyager.
That's right.
People on Voyager have not had it as good as the Krynum timeship. They've had to survive Neelix's cooking.
Interesting. Not bad. Not bad at all.
What is it exactly?
I call it the elixir of endurance. It's loaded with amino acids, carbohydrates, all the nutrients necessary for the crew to withstand these stressful conditions.
Ration cubes.
Well, yes, yes, but this time pureed and mixed with water and enhanced with Talaxian spices.
It is offensive. Fortunately, taste is irrelevant.
Chakotay has become Anorax's protege and is running simulations to try to fix everything. He figures it hinges on a comet and erases the comet from existence. Whoops.
Component 37329, a rogue comet. About 8 months ago, Voyager made a course correction to avoid the comet. According to my calculations, it led to our entering Krynum space.
The solution, then, would be to erase that comet from history.
Exactly. Voyager would have stayed on its course and bypassed Krynum space altogether.
Sounds simple enough. Conduct a simulation.
Temporal incursion in progress.
What happened? Had you actually eradicated that comet, all life within 50 light years would never have existed. Congratulations. You almost wiped out 8,000 civilizations.
I didn't consider the entire history of the comet.
4 billion years ago, fragments from that comet impacted a planet. Hydrocarbons from those fragments gave rise to several species of plant life, which in turn sustained more complex organisms. Ultimately, several spacefaring civilizations evolved and colonized the entire sector.
By erasing the comet, I altered all evolution in this region.
Past, present, and future They exist as one. They breathe together. You're not the only person to make this mistake. When I first constructed this weapon ship, I turned it against our greatest enemy, the Rilnar. The result was miraculous. With the Rilnar gone from history, my people, in an instant, became powerful again. But there were problems. A rare disease broke out among our colonies. Within a year, 50 million were dead. I had failed to realize that the Rilnar had introduced a crucial antibody into the Krenim genome. And my weapon had eliminated that antibody as well.
You've been trying to undo that damage ever since. But each time you pull out a new thread, another one begins to unravel.
You can't imagine the burden of memory that I carry. Thousands of worlds, billions of lives, gone, brought back, gone again. I try to rationalize the loss. They're not really being destroyed because they never existed. Sometimes I can almost convince myself.
You've been at this for 200 years, Anorax. What makes you think you're ever going to succeed?
What makes you think Voyager will ever reach Earth? The odds against you are astronomical. Yet you keep trying.
So this starts with Tuvok sort of starting to buy into this idea that this could work. But I like how it takes the approach where he's trying to be the good person about how he uses this weapon.
Oh, you mean Chakotay?
Yeah. You mean Chakotay.
You said Tuvok.
Oh, did I say Tuvok? Yes, I meant Chakotay. So he's not going to use it on civilizations. He's going to look for inanimate things that he could erase that could help them.
Right.
And it turns out that that's actually worse.
Yeah.
Than choosing to wipe out a civilization.
Now, why couldn't he have wiped it out like a month ago instead of 4.5 billion years ago or 5 billion years ago?
Because they don't have time travel. They only have the ability to erase something from existence. They can't choose when to erase it. They're removing it from the entire timeline.
Hmm.
If they were able to time travel, they could do that, because then they could just time travel to before Voyager met that asteroid and shoot it out of space with a regular weapon.
Or they could time travel back to before he turned it on that his enemy the first time and said, hey, dude.
Yes.
Just before you do that, just look at the data.
Yeah.
You know who I am, where I'm from. It's obvious. Don't touch me because I don't know what's going to happen.
And Chakotay buys into it. Let me keep doing it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Chakotay's game is here. I mean, I don't know. I really don't figure. I can't quite figure out what he's doing because it in a way it seems like he's buying for time. And then
I think that might be what it started with, because he was afraid the guy would just dump him into space or something. But then he really started to buy into it.
Yeah,
I don't know why they gave this to Chakotay, because he doesn't seem to be the person who's really good at temporal mechanics.
Yeah.
It should have been Seven.
He has an intuition for it. And they didn't say, hey, let's beam over the people that really know what they're doing. They're like, let's just take some two random people and part of the hull so we can check them all out.
Right.
Well, are we past the point where he and Paris have their conversation?
Yes.
No, that's next.
Oh, wait, no.
Okay. Because I was going to say something about Chakotay based on that, so I'll save it till after that if that's coming up. Let's go there.
Chakotay really is becoming like Anorex, and Paris calls him on it.
I'm starting to make progress on the temporal calculations. With a little time and luck, I think we can get the Krenim back on their feet and Voyager back to the Alpha Quadrant.
You're starting to sound like Anorex. Always one more calculation. This time it's going to be perfect. This can work. If you take time to listen, you'd understand what Anorex is trying to do.
What? Wipe out civilizations to help his own race? I understand perfectly.
It's more complicated than that. Anorax is an enlightened man. Misguided, but I think he wants this to end as much as anyone.
I guess I don't have the instinct for time, or whatever it is Captain Nemo out there calls it.
Oh, but you left out my favorite part.
Which one is that?
It may be my favorite Chakotay line ever. He's like, Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's from before. It's from before, isn't it? I don't know. At some point, he's like, well, listen, if you want to, they're talking about the chain of command.
Oh, yeah.
Is like, what chain of command? Chain of command? Forget about it. And he's like, if you don't want to follow the chain of command, we'll have to, you know, settle our differences the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
And Paris is like, oh, and just backs off like, I ain't messing with that guy. I'm like, what? See? I think Chakotay's a tough guy. Anyway.
Well, I mean, wait. He's a tough guy compared to Tom Paris.
Yeah, right. But then now it's like, wait a minute. He really is buying into this. You're right, Mike. It's been a few weeks since I watched this. He's totally buying into it. So
yeah.
What's that about, man?
Well, okay. Remember,
seriously,
he loves Janeway secretly, and he wants to give her what she wants, which is to get her crew home to the Alpha Quadrant. So, I mean, if he can use this tech to do that, why not?
Nah, I think he's shown himself to be a traitor to the Federation before. Now he's just traitoring again. Yeah, he just loves that. You know, maybe we could take Chakotay out of the timeline. No, we need to do that with Kes. Well, more important targets.
Thank goodness they did finally. I don't know. I Chakotay. Boy, wow. Bad. I don't know. This is not good. I don't like where this is going, you know?
Nope.
Like, but he does tell Paris at the end of that clip, he's like, all right, well, listen, you've got some guys who are willing to mutiny. Fine. Let's keep that as an option. So at least he's not completely loop the loop, but
you mean he's traitoring again?
Yeah, wait,
well,
he's traitoring everybody.
He's totally just bluffing because he's like, okay, we'll keep that as plan B. Let me just try one.
Yeah, let me just try
1,000 more calculations.
What I can't get over is I think maybe he has Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah.
Look at this poor anorex guy. I mean, really, you just don't understand him. The poor guy's just trying to get that one colony back. You know, he's lost a lot. He's gonna make it all right.
Right.
It was something that was in the food.
Probably.
Gave him some kind of brainwashing potion.
He might have.
Well, that's giving Chakotay a pass.
Well, he kind of needs it at this point.
I mean, I suppose so. I mean, I don't know. Like, why do you think they decided to go that route with Chakotay? Like, becoming, like, the villain's protege?
Well, because I mean, just because
Tom Paris would never do it because he's Captain Proton.
Yeah, but also it just shows you that even Captain the that it might just be if you're well-intentioned enough, but you're pushed to an extreme situation, you might make choices that make you a bad guy.
Yeah, but I thought these are supposed to be our heroes. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, this was a simulation. He didn't actually do anything.
Right.
No, but he's gearing up to help Anorax wipe out a civilization.
Yes, and he's okay with that. Totally okay with that.
Well, he seems like he's trying to, like you were saying, he's like, oh, let's just erase inanimate objects, you know, but, oh, now I've seen the error of my ways. Great. Yep. So people are going to die. Okay. Thanks, Chakotay. Don't like it.
All right. Anorax is insane. He's determined to change history and get 100% back, including a colony that is always missing, no matter what he does.
I'm altering history on a massive scale. The destinies of countless star systems are in my hands. The fate of one species is insignificant. You're trying to rationalize genocide. One species is significant. A single life is significant. It seems so easy the first time. In the blink of an eye, I had changed history itself. Allowed my people to thrive again. But when I changed history a second time, I lost more than you can imagine.
The colony on Kiana Prime.
How could you know that?
I've been studying your previous incursions. No matter how close you get to restoring the timeline, one component is always missing. Kiana Prime. Who was on that colony? Who did you lose?
My wife. And with her, my future. My children, grandchildren. All erased because of me. So many years, I worked through the night while she was sleeping. How could I have known I was calculating her fate? I can't stop until I've restored Kiana Prime and forced time to give me back my wife.
Maybe it isn't possible.
When I tell you, the time has moved. a disposition to be intuited. I'm not speaking metaphorically.
What do you mean?
Anger is one of its moods. Anger and the desire for retribution, vengeance. Time itself has tried to punish me for my arrogance. It has kept me from my wife, denied me my future.
Now time is alive.
Yep.
I mean,
oh boy.
I mean, the guy is off the deep end. And the thing is he killed his wife because he did calculations that eventually destroyed, you know, erased the colony from being there.
Right.
It was never there.
Right.
And so if it was never there, or no, I don't think it was never there. I think it was, there was a virus or something that happened that wiped them out.
Well, no, at this point he's gone so far that it never existed.
Well, then if it never existed and he's there, his wife must be somewhere else then.
No, what? Just because
he lost me.
Just because it's a...
He was with her on the colony.
Right.
And so if the colony was never there, then he wouldn't have gone with his wife there to do all those calculations. So he must have done the calculations somewhere else. So why isn't his wife, wherever he was, doing those calculations?
No, he's currently in a state of, you know, temporal flux or whatever. So his memories are intact. He remembers the timeline the way it was when he was there.
Right.
He's, you know, I mean, so to him, he was there. He left there, fired the weapon, and then what was there ceased to be there, but he was still there remembering it because he was inside this, you know, shell of time space.
I understand what you're saying, Carrie.
Yeah.
There will be timelines where his wife never went to that colony, even though it doesn't exist.
Right.
He might be living with her happily. But the problem is, he can't go there.
Because he's psycho.
Because he's created a timeline where he's there. He needs to restore the one that he is from so he can go back to it.
I don't even think he knows that.
Yeah, it's
crazy. Because he's just interested in making sure that that colony is there. So that show, yes, of course, she'll be there.
That's because that's the timeline he wants back.
Okay, so let's say he actually gets what he wants, and like the time and that colony is there, and he goes there thinking he'll find her. What if she's not there? You know,
that's a possibility.
Well, then he's totally
screwed.
Because
the colony's there, but maybe not the specific person.
Yeah, that's where you're getting down to the blade of grass thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, and as I listen to this clip, though, I got to say, I don't know. You talk about, you know, Chakotay, you know, being, you know, traitorous or whatever. It seems like he's playing a much bigger game because my impression, as I listen to that scene, I remember my impression of the episode being kind of like, okay, he's playing Anorax, and he's like, but he's telling Paris, like, you know, you should actually pay attention. This is actually something, you know, I didn't think.
That's what doesn't make sense. He tells Paris that he doesn't understand Anorax. It's okay that he's wiping out civilizations because he's looking at a bigger picture. But then he goes, he tells Anorax, well, it's not okay to wipe out civilizations.
Right. Maybe because Paris called him on it and then he reevaluated himself. You know, or else maybe he's worried that the walls have ears.
Oh, that could be.
And also, as he's, you know, in terms of asserting the chain of command, he can say, you know, he doesn't have to explain himself to Paris.
Right.
You know, and he can plant in his head whatever he wants. I don't know. It's a little unclear what's going on with Chakotay, but my impression was watching the episode, and I remember having the impression when I watched it originally when it first aired back in 97, that he was doing something good here, like he was playing everybody and something, but I don't know. It's kind of vague as we listen to the clips and talk about it.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not sure that it's holding up under scrutiny. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Janeway has assembled an alliance of different species who are tired of Krynim's interference. She's shared temporal shielding technology with them. She decides to stay on the Voyager and use it in the battle to coordinate the attack. There are some rough music cuts, so sorry about that.
Once we're in range, Tom says he'll try to take the weapon ship temporal core offline. When that happens, they'll be vulnerable to conventional weapons. Tom will then transmit the exact location of the core. Our job will be to disable the ship and get our people out. Is everyone clear? I'll be piloting Voyager, coordinating the attack.
Captain, there's barely enough of this ship left to get there, much less wage a war.
There's fighting Voyager yet. Still got temporal shields. 6 photon torpedoes. It'll hold together. Besides, you know the adage. Captain goes down with the ship, right? You have your orders. Dismissed.
Given Voyager's damaged state, the probability of your surviving an armed conflict is marginal.
Oh, I know the odds, but I have to stay. Voyager's done too much for us.
Curious. I have never understood the human compulsion to emotionally bond with inanimate objects. This vessel has done nothing. It is an assemblage of bulkheads, conduits, tritanium. Nothing more.
We are wrong. It's much more than that. This ship has been our home. It's kept us together. It's been part of our family. As illogical as this might sound, I feel as close to Voyager as I do to any other member of my crew. It's carried us, Tuvok. Even nurtured us. And right now, it needs one of us.
That's very poetic, isn't it?
Yes.
But just to entirely break the mood, I'd like to share with you what Carrie called this clip. A full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Yes, straight out of the Blues Brothers movie.
Right? When she's there and she's talking about all this stuff, all I can think of is, like, she's there with John Belushi.
Yep. Yep. We got a full tank of gas.
Penguin has told them to do something.
Half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark. And we're wearing it's night and it's dark and we're wearing sunglasses. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's not a whole lot to say about that last clip. It's like, you know, it's very pretty, very moving.
Well, because it's the lead into the climactic scene.
Right.
And it's nice. They give Kate Mulgrew a nice, you know, bit of dialogue to deliver there. She does a great, you know, pretty good, really good job with it. Yeah, really good.
Well, and we have in the past talked about how some people think of inanimate objects as being kind of sentient.
Are you talking about me again?
No.
you're animate.
No, like they.
You are an animate object.
I'm being projected by a hollow emitter, which is actually an inanimate object.
Well, it moves with you as it self projects you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a gray area there. That line is definitely fuzzy.
But it kind of sets it up for something bad is going to happen to the Voyager because, you know, it's their home. It's always been there for them. And somebody needs to stay there. And the captain always goes down with the ship.
Yeah, but you know what? I thought it was a really great delivery on that. Like, yeah. I mean, it's borderline cliche, but if it weren't so damn heroic, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
But I thought her delivery of that was like, that's what it's supposed to do, right? You know, just wow, really nailed it.
And of course, in epic Janeway fashion, I know what the odds are, but I have to do it anyway.
Yeah. The odds are low enough where this will succeed.
Yes, if we can just get the odds bad enough, we can guarantee success.
All right. Janeway and the allies she's gathered over the year are fighting the Krynum. With her crew dispersed, she mans Voyager to try to end the conflict and restore history.
Target the other vessels. Obrist. I said target the vessels. You're deactivating the temporal core.
I'm sorry, sir. It's over.
Get back to your stations. You will not disobey me. We're phasing back into normal space-time. Reconfigure to conventional weapons.
Captain, Chakotay and Paris were beamed aboard our vessel.
Everything's going as planned. Tom sent me the coordinates of their temporal core before he left. I'm transmitting them to you now.
Conventional weapons are online and fully charged, sir.
Fire at will.
Sir, weapons are back to full capacity.
Target Voyager. Put Janeway out of her misery.
All our ships have been disabled, Captain. Do you have weapons?
Negative.
Torpedo launchers are down. I'm setting a collision course. Janeway to the fleet. Take your temporal shields offline.
Captain, we won't be protected.
Exactly. If that ship is destroyed, all of history might be restored. And this is one year I'd like to forget. Time's up.
So that's when she crashes, and then we hit the reset button, and everything goes back.
Yay!
The way that it was.
Yeah.
Voyager is restored to whole.
It doesn't make sense, though. And the reason I say that is because they took the temporal core offline.
Yeah.
Right. So it shouldn't have had any backlash of temporal energy that wiped it out.
They didn't erase this ship from history.
Oh, right.
They erased it from the moment.
Well, no, wait.
I mean, the ship still has the ship under the rules of the story. The ship exists now, all of a sudden, when it didn't before.
Right.
And they're not erasing it from history. They're just destroying it in the timeline that they're in.
Let me tell you guys something.
Okay.
I can take the warp engines offline without shutting the warp engines down. I'm just disconnecting them from the ship.
Well, they had they had to take the temporal core offline because that was the only way conventional weapons could hurt
the ship. He was disconnecting their shielding from the core.
Yes.
I thought as a result of that, though, the ship was taken out of its state of temporal flux and all of a sudden existed in normal space.
It should,
time.
Yes.
But
as if, like, okay, now we're aging. Now we're locked to this timeline if we can't put our shields back on.
Right, but the temporal core still exists. It's still there in the ship. It's
okay,
still on.
Okay, all right, I get you there.
Close that up, which wipes the ship out.
Okay, so for that core to work, it sort of has to exist at all time. In all time. It has to, even though they can't traverse time, this core somehow has a connection. So if you destroy that core,
right,
it's as if the ship never existed.
Yep.
Okay, I can go with that.
Right, so if destroying if the rules include the fact that you destroy this ship as it is and everything's restored as if the ship never existed, I'm okay. Yeah, great, fine. If it's following the rules, that's fine. So that's cool.
All right, just to wrap this up, Anorex is shown on the colony with his wife, who gets him to leave his work, which looks a lot like the weapon on the Krynum ship, behind to spend time with her. Is this 200 years ago? Will he avoid the horrible thing he did now that Janeway has reset the timeline? Do we ever hear about this again?
Of course not.
Of course, the answer is no.
No, we don't ever hear about this again.
No.
I think what it is it's his wife distracting him from finishing the weapon.
Right.
That's the change in the timeline.
Right. And this time around, he allows himself to actually enjoy being with his wife rather than being consumed with work,
right?
Her destruction. So.
Yep. Yeah, you're right.
It has to be a 200 year ago flashback.
Yep.
But it's a way better situation than.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So somehow through the magic of space time, he's learned a lesson.
Yay! Magic space time.
But then again, I don't know. You ever get this flash, I shouldn't do something?
No, you know what it is? No, here's what it is. And everybody that likes science is going to hate this. It's time finally giving in and letting him have what he wanted.
That's why
he's changing his mind.
Because time is no longer angry at him?
Yes, exactly.
Whatever.
Oh, boy.
I told you she wouldn't like it.
Well, it's like you're implying, that was psycho Anorax talking, and it's like,
And Mike has Stockholm Syndrome. He's bought into that psycho Anorax
he's
thing.
He's Chakotay. We got to pull him out, Captain. We got to reset his photons, man.
People have been personifying time for thousands of years.
Father Time.
Baby New Year.
Kronos.
Baby New Year.
Yep, Kronos. All kinds of gods from all kinds of different planets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just means they were wrong.
Okay.
All right. Episode name meaning Year of Hell.
Because it was a year of hell. Go ahead.
Speaking as the person that got the clips for this, I think I spent a year of hell getting the clips and putting it together.
Yeah.
This has been a heck of a ride trying to get to this recording.
Yes.
It's true.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, time was against us.
Yes, it was.
Oh, angry, angry time.
But yes, I think the name meaning is pretty clear.
Yeah,
it's literally a year, but it's a year that never existed.
Right.
Which is like the best thing that could have happened. Like, okay, year of hell, done. Didn't happen.
So what that means for the German episode name is...
That year didn't happen.
Nothing happens.
It's the year that never was.
The year that never was.
Yes, the year that got rebooted. Yeah, the year that never was. Mike wins. Oh, clickbait episode name. Now that's a good one.
Captain J-Lay versus Captain Ahab. See what happens.
Call me Chakotay.
What happens when you erase a comet from existence? Chakotay finds out.
Yeah.
Now, see, okay, well, here's the thing. So he's running a simulation, right? He's not actually doing a temporal incursion.
Yes, that's true.
And since they're existing out of space-time, like, they can do just tons and tons of these calculations and stuff without ever actually doing anything.
Right.
Until they get 100%.
Yeah, but he doesn't do that. Because
no, instead he does temporal incursion after temporal incursion.
Because, well, here's the problem. Their algorithm, even for doing the testing, is not 100% accurate. There's too many variables. You can't calculate that. So even when they think they've got it, some tiny thing throws it off.
I blame Chakotay.
All right, ratings. Mike, you picked this episode?
Yes. So we got super time weapons, wiping people out from existence, destruction of the ship, and a big giant reset button at the end. I loved this whole thing. I am going to, you know, I really can't say that it has increased or improved humanity. You know, I'm going to give it a 10 anyway.
Wow.
Wow. That is pretty good, Mike.
Mike's perfect episode.
Mike is crazy.
That's right. It's just awesome.
All right, Bill?
10. That's crazy.
That's what I said.
That's crazy. No, it's good, though. It is good. Wow. It's definitely exceptional. It's dazzling.
It's going up.
He's taking its temperature. Yeah, he's got this little thing that he's sticking in the episode.
I know.
Turkey popper.
It doesn't give me hope for the human race, though. So I'm going to give it an 8. It's a really good episode.
Yeah, I'm going to concur with Bill. I really enjoyed this episode. Wasn't quite inspirational. Of course, there is zero character development.
Yes.
Except for Chakotay getting Stockholm Syndrome.
There was a lot of character development, but it was all wiped out.
Yeah,
I see. Right. Well, yeah, I mean, like, the thing with Tuvok and Seven of Nine is interesting to look at, you know, how that could have gone.
Although I have a problem with Tuvok being blinded. A Vulcan shouldn't be blinded.
Because of his inner eyelid.
Oh, right.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, that was a torpedo. All it did was, like, flame out. It should have exploded and killed him in the explosion.
It was a dud.
Well, no. Hey, they put a force field around it.
Oh, they put a force field around it. I missed that part somehow. Okay, so he was just blinded by the light? That's poppycock.
No, it's possible.
It's a song.
No, I mean, for a Vulcan to be blinded like that, that's poppycock.
Yes. Okay.
It's insane. If Spock could withstand what he withstood, he would have maybe he would have been blinded for like a day or two. He would have been fine.
Exactly. Right. So I'm giving it an 8. Dazzling.
All right.
Ooh. Much like the light that blinded Tuvok.
Good for you. Okay, so there were like some minor inconsistencies and things that didn't make sense, right? So I am not going to give it a 10, Mike.
I understand.
Yeah.
As much as I enjoy it, not going to do that.
Not going to.
But I did like it. I like the premise of it. I like that the idea that you can have the time travel without anyone actually traveling in time.
Right.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
Which was pretty darn cool. Janeway's new haircut, I did like the trivia. It gets bumped up half a point because of trivia.
Nice.
Yeah, but you didn't like her new haircut?
I don't know. I mean... It's
the rest of the series, isn't it, I think?
I don't know.
I didn't like the big bun hair.
No, and that's the thing is, I wasn't a big fan of that either.
It looks like she should be going to a ball.
But then again, I will say this. I wear a bun quite frequently, especially when I'm doing science.
It's so cliche. Uh-huh.
Well, it's a functional hairstyle.
Yes. So, and I think, you know, because she's a scientist, maybe, you know, she was doing science and so she had her hair in a bun.
But do you puff out the sides of your hair?
No.
You get like a hat your bun sits on?
No, I do not.
Okay, see, then there you go.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it an 8.5.
All right.
Okay, look, I was going to give it an 8, dazzling, but trivia in it bumps it up half a point.
Right.
Well, all right. So what is the average out to?
A
8.5 or 9?
It goes up to 9.
All right.
Mike, are you freezing up or are you just – no, you really are just –
No, standing. I was just looking sideways.
Okay, because earlier it looked like you were frozen. You had the same expression on your face for like a minute, and then you started speaking. It freaked me right out, man. I was like, whoa. You should like be one of those mannequins.
Yeah, that's how us holographic people like to mess with the norms.
Ah! Mission accomplished. Nicely played, my friend. Nicely played.
Bill, you're back from I almost said obliteration, but that would have been cool.
You would have loved that.
All right.
I was so excited that my lungs just had to expel.
His lungs seized up.
I can't believe it.
Well, Bill, you should be
I'm
really
so excited. Happy. Oh, my goodness. Oh, God, geez.
No, this is great for a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll make him some holographic ones later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't get in your own head. Well, maybe you should get in your own head. Does it work if you get in your own head to help you or hurt you?
It depends on how far inside you go.
I left out something Neelix said that was pretty funny, which was when...
Oh, what a tragedy. We left out something Neelix
said. Wait, but it was good because it was...